In today's changing world, fast decisions need to be smart decisions. That's why Workday delivers quick insights to help your finance team plan for what's next. Workday, the finance, HR, and planning system for a changing world.
Here's your money briefing for Thursday, July 22nd. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal. You might have heard of non-compete clauses. Maybe you've even had to sign one for your job. For ages, companies have used non-competes to keep workers from heading off to work for competitors.
Partly as a labor retention strategy. You know, they, especially at a, you know, perhaps a time like this or when the labor market is very tight, they don't want to lose workers.
But the days of non-compete clauses may be numbered. Coming up, our workplace reporter Lauren Weber will explain how states and the federal government are taking steps to weaken non-competes or take them off the books altogether. That's after the break.
Adapting to change is more important than ever. That's why over 45% of the Fortune 500 rely on Workday, the enterprise cloud that prepares you for what's next. Workday, the finance, HR, and planning system for a changing world.
Workers quit jobs and move on to the next step in their career all the time. But when it comes to the possibility of taking a job with a competitor, that's when things get tricky. Companies often include non-compete stipulations in employee agreements as a way of restricting where they can go after leaving their job. Now these agreements are drawing attention from regulators. Lauren Weber covers workplace issues for the WSJ. She wrote about non-competes and what their future looks like. Lauren, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So Lauren, why do employers sometimes use non-competes and how common are they?
Originally, non-compete agreements were used mainly to protect real trade secrets. So they were applied to the contracts of, say, top executives or high-performing salespeople or technical scientists who had real, you know, proprietary information like formulas. But over time, they've become much more common, partly, I think, because of the internet. This is what some of my sources told me. It became really easy for business owners and lawyers to just find a template online, cut and paste it into employment contracts, and apply it to all of their workers. So according to one survey that was completed recently, 32% of companies use non-compete agreements in the employment contracts for all of their employees. That's from entry-level workers and the lowest paid workers all the way up to their highest executives. And I just want to add to that, like I said, entry-level workers, but you know, even very low paid people have become caught up in these non-compete agreements, like janitors or baristas or school teachers, security guards. So for people who are earning relatively little and in large part don't have access to confidential information, they're still being caught up in these.
So what does a typical non-compete clause in an employee's agreement with a company call for? And what do they actually say?
Generally, non-compete clauses will say something like you can't go to work for a competitor, a direct rival in the same industry, usually for a certain length of time. It might be 6 months, it might be 2 years, sometimes it's even longer. Sometimes they'll also include a geographic radius. So it might be you can't go to work for another company in the same industry within a radius of 50 miles. Sometimes they're actually applied globally. So there's a lot of discretion that companies have to set the terms for these.
Now, non-competes have been criticized for a number of reasons. So let's talk about some of them. You mentioned that employees handling sensitive company data might have to sign one, but that even a lot of other kinds of workers do too, like blue-collar workers.
It's true. Many workers, you know, they show up to work on the first day and they're asked to sit in a room and sign a bunch of HR forms. This is often one of those forms they sign. Some people don't even really read the full text of it. But you know, companies have tried to enforce a lot of these non-competes against blue-collar workers, people making hourly wages, often not making very much, partly as a labor retention strategy. You know, they, especially at a, you know, perhaps a time like this or when the labor market is very tight, they don't want to lose workers. So one way to try to keep people working for you and not going across the street to your rival is to ask them to sign one of the agreements and then send them a threatening letter if they quit the job and you hear that they've moved on to another company in the same industry.
So companies cast a wide net with these agreements. Do the constraints differ across different levels of employees?
Sure. Another difference between blue collar or hourly wage workers and then white collar or very professional workers who sign these contracts is, you know, executives or salespeople, scientists, they might have a lawyer who's looking over their contracts before they sign them. So they have an opportunity to negotiate. Another difference is that for those kinds of employees, sometimes they get access to something called garden leave. What it means basically is if your non-compete says that you can't work in the industry for, say, 2 years or a year, your former employer might agree to pay you all or part of your salary for that time because they recognize they're taking you out of the labor market and not giving you an opportunity to earn an income during that time. But blue-collar workers or lower-wage workers generally don't have that written into their contract. Many times they don't have access to an employer to help them negotiate or even sort of understand what the limits of these terms are. And, you know, usually when you take a job, you're not thinking, what's going to happen to me when I quit this job? You know, sometimes you're even just very grateful to have that job. And, you know, for all you know, you're going to be there for years. So it's just, it's not top of mind for people until they get hit with a threatening letter or a cease and desist letter and are basically told, you know, you have to sit out of the labor market for some amount of time.
Do these agreements have any intended benefits for employees?
That's a good question. Nobody I spoke to, including attorneys who help companies enforce these agreements, really told me what the benefits are for workers. It's really, these agreements were written mainly to help companies. Again, the original purpose was to protect trade secrets. If you are a scientist working for Coca-Cola, you know, Coca-Cola has a very strong interest in protecting the secret formula for Coke. You know, same thing for a lot of scientific developments or advances. But again, the sort of indiscriminate use of these agreements has meant that companies are arguing that anything can be confidential information or proprietary information, whether it's a customer list or how you were trained for your job. I interviewed a security guard who was making about $11 an hour, and he was threatened with a lawsuit. He actually was eventually sued by his former employer when he quit and tried to take another job as a security guard. And when I asked the former employer's lawyer, you know, what confidential information did this person have access to? He said, well, you know, we invested a lot in training him. And, you know, through the training, he learned our training methods. He learned our proprietary security guard systems and technologies and things like that, along with customer information. But, you know, it's very subjective what is proprietary information or not. And at the moment, we kind of leave it up to courts to hammer that out. But a lot of workers don't have the resources or the knowledge to hire a lawyer to fight this in court.
Okay, so let's talk about the pushback against non-compete clauses. Some states already limit non-competes. What's the current status around the country?
Yeah, some states have limits in place already. It might be something relating to, Washington State not long ago said that you can't impose a non-compete agreement on anybody earning less than $100,000 a year. In a few states, including California, which is an important example, they basically have said, the legislature there has basically said non-compete agreements are not enforceable. So generally speaking, companies know better than to even try to do a non-compete in California. And many people say that's partly why Silicon Valley developed in California was because talent was able to move around. That meant ideas were able to move around. There was no limit on somebody who was, say, trained by a big technology company leaving and starting their own startup with some great idea they had. So, you know, there are a lot of arguments that non-competes hold back innovation. You know, but California is kind of the exception. Most states basically have some limitations, but leave it up to courts to make a lot of these decisions.
And now there are efforts to rein them in at the federal level. Most notably, President Biden targeted them in a recent executive order. What are the expectations for how new federal rules might play out?
Yeah, President Biden wants to rein these in, and that's been, non-competes have been a target for a long time of many worker advocates. And, you know, he's basically saying this is part of a pro-competition order where he wants to improve competition for businesses, but also for workers, and give workers the ability to move around freely, which also means they have more ability to raise their wages, because often people will get a bigger bump in their salary or income when they switch jobs. So he's basically asked the Federal Trade Commission to take a look at non-compete rules. and set some limits on them. He also said they could consider an outright ban, but all the people I spoke to, lawyers, legal scholars, they don't expect the agency to put an outright ban on these, but they do expect there to be some limits, whether perhaps by income or the duration of the non-compete, or perhaps the geographic radius.
Okay, that's WSJ Workplace reporter Lauren Weber. Lauren, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen for The Wall Street Journal.